Administration Committee, call this meeting to order. I've been joined by my colleagues to my immediate left, Councilmember Mary Norwood, followed by Councilmember Boone, followed by Councilmember Sean Waits. Constitute a quorum. I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Norwood. Please prepare the vote.
One moment, Mr. Chair.
While we're waiting on the vote, for the record, we've also been joined by Councilmember Byron Amos, our Vice Chair.
The vote's up. The vote is closed.
5-6 yeas, 0 nays. Agenda is adopted. I'll now make a motion to approve the minutes of the prior meetings. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Vice Chair Amos. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open.
Lewis, aye.
The vote is closed.
Good afternoon. My name is Jill Arrington, and I'm the Regional Executive Director for MAD Georgia. And thank you for letting me speak with you today. For over 40 years, MAD Georgia has been instrumental in reducing drunk driving in the state, advocating and supporting victims and their families of this devastating crime. Specifically, MAD's mission is to end drunk driving, to eliminate drugged driving, to support victims and their families of drunk driving, and to eliminate underage drinking. Since MAD's founding, drunk driving in the nation has been reduced by 50%. And though we've made strides over the years, with over 347,000 incidents of drunk driving every day, still there are 21 million chances for our loved ones to encounter an impaired driver on U.S. roads this holiday season. That started November 1st, a few days ago, and ends December 31st. Specifically within our state, NHTSA recently reported that traffic fatalities due to alcohol impairment in Georgia increased by 8.4% from 2021 from the prior year. Further, the Governor's Office of Highway Safety noted that alcohol impairment still remains the highest ranking risky behavior of impaired driving for the state, accounting for nearly a quarter of all fatal crashes. So that's why we walked 3 days ago on Saturday, November 11th at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That's why we walked with over 2,000 participants joining Mad Georgia, the Atlanta Track Club, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and the Arthur Blank family of businesses to support Mad's mission to end drunk driving and to eliminate drugged driving. And that's why we are here today. We understand that there is pending or proposed legislation extending bar hours for the city of Atlanta, and we're asking the committee to file that legislation. MAD opposes any proposal to extend the current closing time for the sale of alcohol at bars and restaurants in the city of Atlanta. But just don't listen to me tell you about the statistics. What I would like for you to do is to listen to our victims, our family members, and the attorneys who represent their cases. Listen to their stories. While you listen, remember that only together can we have a city with no more victims of this devastating and 100% preventable crime. We ask you again to please file this legislation. At this moment, I'd like, in this order to come up, Q. McCoo, Ian Rattray, Tamika Buck, and Attorney Buck Rogers. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Shaquita McCoo. I go by Q to make it easier for others to remember my name. I am a survivor of a pedestrian drunk driving crash that happened on November 15, 2013. My offender was at Cheetah's nightclub at 4:30 in the afternoon. The crash occurred at 6:30 p.m. Due to the crash, I was severely injured. I had two broken shoulders, a hematoma to the head, fractured ribs, a bruised lung, a broken right wrist. My spleen was ruptured, so I had to be emergency removed. For 4 months, I was an infant. I couldn't do anything for myself. My mother had to take care of me, and I am my only child. After this crash, it triggered a pulmonary disease called pulmonary fibrosis, which made me have to have a double lung transplant in 2017. I was a chef before the crash. I was able to go back to work after the crash, but once the pulmonary fibrosis was triggered, I could no longer work in the culinary world. I am now on disability, no able to work in the culinary world. Now I advocate for no more victims, for no more families to ever go through what we went through. My mother had to go through two traumatic experiences with me. Being an only child, I can never explain to you what she felt. My offender only served five years probation and had to pay restitution fee. and went to jail 2016, every weekend in January, Friday through Sunday. Got to live his life Monday through Friday while I was going through these health issues. So I ask you to do this legislation, to not allow this to add more hours to this bar time, to keep it where it is, because I want no more victims, no more families to suffer. Thank you.
This is Cynthia Hagen. Ian Rattray.
Good afternoon. Thank you for letting me speak. My son was killed by a drunk driver. He had just graduated Georgia Tech 2 weeks before, summa cum laude, top research student of the year for the university, and top student in his college. He had a great future ahead of him, but that was taken away by the drunk driver. We got a call about 10:15, basically saying, could we come down to Grady as soon as we could? There was a lot of panic. I'm kind of normally know what to do, kind of in control kind of guy, so I quietened my wife and daughter down. We got in the car and we drove down there. When we got there, we were taken into the area where Liam was lying, one of the emergency beds. And he had a bandage on his head. He was in a bit of a mess. And you know, but we had hope. You know, we thought, you know, he'll be fine. You know, it's Liam. He'll be okay. It's going to be fine. And we went over to him, and one of his eyes was open a little bit, and I could see that there was no life there, that there was a problem. My wife was holding his hand and telling him that mommy's here and everything's going to be okay. I went and spoke to the doctors, and they said that it was kind of a little bit confusing. You know, they didn't answer. They tried to evade, and I went back to Liam. And then, yeah, I'm an organized guy. I'm like, what are we going to do? What's the course of action? What's, you know, how do we take care of this? And I went back again, and they told me that there was nothing to be done. And I was like, what do you mean nothing can be done? And they basically, very politely, explained that his brains had been bashed out in the road. Our son, 2 weeks before he graduated Georgia Tech. So I went back and told my wife, and I mean, it was awful. We were there the whole night. They let us stay in the room with him until he was called. So it still sits with the family, not just us. It basically ruined our lives. It sits with our extended family. We have family, I'm from Scotland, we have family all over the world. Any family gathering, there's a dark cloud. There's this elephant in the room that can't be discussed, all because Darren E. Murphy, the drunk driver, chose to drink from pretty much midday, all day and all night. And when he got in his car, he only managed to drive half a mile before he killed my son. And it's a deliberate act. It's not, people say accident. It's not an accident. It was a very deliberate act that man did. I have the same concern that if we extend the hours of drinking, that it will allow this type of thing to happen even more. And so I oppose vehemently increasing the length of time that bars can be open. Thank you for letting me speak. By the way, I have like 8 pages, but I figured I wouldn't make you all suffer. Thank you.
And also, before we move along, we've been joined by Councilmember Antonio Lewis. Next is Tamika Buck.
Good afternoon. And thank you, City Council and Matt, for having me here today. I've been a teen mom for years, up until August 2nd, 2021, when Gary Lynn Muir decided that he wanted to drink and drive. On that day at 7:40 p.m., I immediately became a mad mom. When you all have the time, I want you to take out your phones and look back in your phones and look at that last picture. You have memories. This is all I have of my son. Chase, the age of 8. Javarius, the age of 19. This is the last picture we took on August 2nd, 2021. I became a mad mom because of Gary Lynn Muir deciding that he wanted to drink and drive. I will no longer be able to make memories with my sons, my only two babies. I'm at the age of 50. They were all I had. So when you have the time to look back, even if you don't have kids, you have loved ones. Think of it as you being out on a vacation, making memories. You're headed back to your destination, full of laughter with that loved one. And it's ended by someone who decided to drink and drive on a Monday. On a Monday evening, we have to stop this some type of way. If it's to end the time during bar hours to be earlier, then let's do that. It's because we don't want any more victims. I never would have thought that this would have been my last time seeing my babies alive. Y'all do not understand how much it hurts. Day in, day out, I wake up to an empty house. The holidays are no longer happy days. I run from holidays. I stay away from family because it used to be to where it was me and my boys that showed up. So I'm asking you all to help. To help to where it would no longer be no more victims. Because it could very well be you as a victim, as a survivor. It could very well be your family member as a victim, as a survivor. My name is Tamika Buck. I went from a teen mom to a mad mom to a glad mom because I'm here to talk about my kids every day of the year. Thank you.
Bob Rogers.
Good afternoon. I'm Buck Rogers. My real name is Brian Rogers, but I go by Buck. I'm an attorney in the Atlanta area, try cases all over the Southeast. I want to make some clarifications that the committee's probably interested in knowing. Matt is not anti-drinking. Matt is not anti-business. Matt is in favor of responsible drinking. This proposed ordinance change is one that is going to pit victims versus the business community. And the committee is probably wondering, is there any corollary between later serving hours and safety? And I would suggest there is. In my business, where we have occasion to sue bars for irresponsible service of alcohol, that this committee and this municipality issues licenses to permit them to serve alcohol, and it governs them through ordinances and codes. When we have those civil cases, we talk about their responsibility and what they're doing. We call these cases last call cases. We call them last call cases because 30 minutes before the bar closes, they say, hey, last call, you better get one more beer. You better get one more drink. And you can sit there and drink it while we're cleaning up. And they're also last call cases because that is the last time that driver might be served a drink in that bar. To that end, it is good business to be a responsible server of alcohol. It is good business to encourage your patrons to make a plan for safety. And if you are drinking at 2:30 in the morning and you need 30 more minutes, you need an hour more to drink, you need an hour and a half more to drink, it's more. What you need to do about midnight is figure out how you're going to get home at 2:30. And when you have that plan, you execute it. These are last call cases because people drive considerable distance to get to a bar that stays open. In the last 3 years, I've had a case where a young fellow from Douglasville came all the way to Atlanta because Douglasville doesn't stay open that late. I had another one where the lady The drinker stayed in the bar until last call, and then she drank her last drink after closing hours, but she had ordered it before it closed, and they permitted her to keep drinking while they cleaned up. Now, I've seen some of the news coverage, and it's a nominal cost for a bar to stay open 30 more minutes to an hour because they're cleaning up anyhow. They got to prep for the next day. They only pay their servers $2.13 an hour anyway. So they do make more money. But at what cost? At what cost to our citizens? At what cost to your constituents? At what cost to Atlanta? Thank you.
Next is Nick Nicholson.
Hello. I want to thank the Public Safety Committee for your time. I know y'all spent a lot of time trying to make Atlanta better, and we all appreciate that. My name is Nick Nicholson. I live in Midtown, high-rise section of Midtown. I'm president of the Midtown Quality of Life. We are a group that represents the interest of high-rise residents as both condo owners and apartment owners. Of course, you know Midtown. It's a high concentration of entertainment venues, bars, nightclubs, and also it's a high concentration of residents. Over the last few years, we have close to 20,000 residents in a compact area. We all live above a bar, across from a bar, adjacent to a bar. So we're impacted by this. In fact, we've worked on this project, on bar noise for so long. We've worked with Michael Hall and others, and and what we have found out is we've become experts in bar noise. But what bothers me is that we just found out about this proposal for extending hours. We just found out about it over the weekend. I wonder why somebody hadn't contacted us, because we are a depository of information, to discuss this before it starts reaching this level right here. Because of this, we're going to have to oppose this this proposal. And what we'd really like is to at least delay so that we can all start having input. We don't, we're a group, I like mad. We're not anti-business, we like bars, that's why we live in Midtown. But let's sit down and talk about this before it ever gets to this level. We're open, please come talk to us. This whole proposal seems counterintuitive. We extend the drinking hours and it lessens the impact on residents. Now come on, that doesn't fly. Maybe it's true, and I admit some cities have tried it, and it seems to work in some cases. But let's talk about it. I sent you an email and a handout, so you might have this as a green on it. We'll work with you. I mean, if this comes to pass, we think that there ought to be a lot of conditions. Increased funding for APD, funded by the nightclubs that are going to stay open late. Research other cities that have implemented this, find out the pros and cons, address the problem of mass exiting of patrons and how they hang out afterwards. The party goes on. Also, conduct a trial period.
Wrap up, your time has expired.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay. Conduct a trial period. Don't make this permanent if we vote on it. Thank you.
If it's Dita Petros.
Thank you. It's Dita Petros. I'm a member of Midtown Quality of Life, and I'm a resident of Midtown. Thank you for the opportunity to offer our input on this issue. Nick just gave you an overview of the problem we in Midtown have with our bars. I want to put a human face on this issue. Please multiply my case by the thousands of residents who live near bars in Midtown. My husband and I bought a condo on on the corner of Peachtree and 7th, before we knew what Bulldogs was. We know now. We're just lucky we're so old, we don't have to get up early in the morning to go to work. I'd like to invite each member of this committee over to my condo next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights from 3 to 4 a.m. So you can experience firsthand what we go through. I'll give you coffee and donuts to keep you awake. On those nights, we'll be sieged on the corner of 7th and Midtown, 7th and Peachtree, by about 70 to 90 Bulldogs patrons after closing hours. They're reliving the evening. They're happy, they talk loud, sometimes they fight, they yell obscenities at each other. It's a party on those four nights of the week. Can you even imagine how much noise is generated? And the reason they're out there in front of Owen Bank on the corner of Peachtree and 7th is because they're waiting for their rides. They don't live in our neighborhood. They live somewhere else. And their rides are another problem. The rides come with loud music, illegal mufflers, honking horns, so they can alert, I'm here, come get in the car, let's go home. This is all at around 3 to 4 in the morning. So every night, four nights a week, it's the same business. One more hour of drinking just creates more drunks and more noise. Same problem, different hour. I ask you, members of this committee and city council members who may be here, we've been working on this for 5 years, the 5 years I've been in Midtown. How can we help you solve this problem? How can we help you solve this problem to the benefit of bar owners and residents, not just bar owners? We'd really like to help. Thank you for your time.
Shawnee Martinez.
Thank you. My name is Johnny Martinez. I'm one of the owners of Joystick Game Bar on Edgewood Avenue, Mambo Zombie, and by weight and measure over at Coda in Midtown, which is in the food hall. But first of all, it is impossible to stand up here as a bar owner and not be touched and affected by the emotional impact that people have gone through when it comes to drunk drivers. As someone who, as an establishment that if you look at our record, we've had, over the 11 years we've been open, maybe 5 times we've had to call the police. We go out of our way to make sure that we protect our customers, and we try to be good neighbors. For the record, we do not pay $2.13 an hour. We definitely guarantee $15 an hour. We try to be a good business that takes care of the people with us. With all that said, I support the keeping of bar hours open later. I think that what you've seen in other cities, that the later bar hours go, it allows for a more natural progression for people to leave the bars, because there is incidences where people leave the bars en masse at the end of the night, and then that is where the problems seem to kick in. We had a lot of issues on Edgewood Avenue and a lot of difficulties with our residents, our neighbors, because they thought what was happening at the bars was happening in the bars. And what we discovered over COVID, after meeting with everyone over and over and engaging with them, is that a lot of these incidents are indeed from people who come into the city and then sometimes aren't even coming for the bars. We have a culture in America, we have a car culture in America, and I'm not saying for it, I'm not a fan of the big car parties that take place, but there has to be a way for people to separate that kind of public safety issue with legitimate bar owners and restaurant owners who are doing the best they can to follow all the rules and do that. That said, I understand that there might be a need to go through and increase rates at some point when it comes to liquor licenses. I personally believe that a bar like mine, which has an occupancy of 98, should not be paying the same amount for a liquor license for a club that has an occupancy of 2,000. You know, we are paying the same amount, but we don't earn the same amount. We're a different vibe, we're a different business model. It seems to me if there's a way that we're trying to make it easier for small businesses while also controlling larger businesses that have those bigger crowds is to somehow change the liquor licensing so it's based on occupancy or based on sales. And then you're much more likely to get small businesses, mom and pops, who can afford to go through and open something up like that. Margins on bars are really, really tight. And when you run a bar where you're following all the rules, it's really, really tight. But even now, this weekend, if you wanted to go out to a bar at 4 a.m., at 5 a.m. in the city, you can find it. You can find it, it's open. There's someone open running the bar illegally, probably multiple people. The issue is about bad operators and having enough enforcement so that we can go through and make sure that businesses follow the rules they're supposed to follow. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Honoring Jordan.
And now to the Spirit of God, everyone that's here. Then said he unto me, Son of man, these are men that devise mischief and give wicked counsel in this city. Ezekiel 11, chapter 2nd verse. The fact that the Spirit of God was not present in the temple explains how Nebuchadnezzar's men were later in 586 B.C. able to destroy the temple completely, including the Holy of Holies, without divine judgment. When you devise mischief and give wicked counsel, from James Griff regarding me, then you invite the enemy to do it to you. How shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? Luke 18, chapter 7, verse. It is whether believers will persist in supplications, or whether their patience and perseverance will give out by the time Christ finally returns. Jesus says to love one another his way. Therefore will I also deal in fury. My eyes shall not spare, neither shall I have pity. And though they cry in my ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear them. Ezekiel 8, chapter 18, verse. Cover their lips. They will be put to shame and will show the shame openly by covering their lips, which was an oriental gesture to indicate shame and mourning. It's better to receive God's correction and seek to conquer our sin. And he beheld them and said, what is this then that is written? The stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. Luke 20, chapter 17, verse. Jesus bolsters his point by asking in effect, what else does the scripture say at Psalms 118, chapter 22nd, verse? Men, even among God's chosen people, may reject him, but God's plan will succeed, whether with or in spite of them. Jesus, help us to fulfill your will for our lives. I thank God's word for his instructions for us to protect ourselves. What God has given me is for the building of God's kingdom, to help men to live holy, to protect themselves from the plot of the enemy. And the enemy seeks to destroy us. And God give us a way out, but we choose another way. Christ's plan will work better than our own plan. I'm just saying it because what God had revealed to me about, well, the enemy is plotting against us. And we helping them kill us. We, by supplying money to the enemy and giving them money to work against us and giving them plans to work against, I say like for China, because China don't mean us any good. They plotting against us. They're not plotting to help us, to take control. And if you seek the yourselves to take control, then you shall be controlled.
Time's expired. Ron Shakir.
Ron Shakir, so what's going on? A lot of things been going on in the city. I first came down here years ago because I was a street vendor, entrepreneur, do for self. I came to a movement that connected me with community and the pride of having your own business. And it was accepted. And then it started being rollbacks. We were told that we couldn't, we can only do this, you got to do this, you can't, you know, work here, you can't sell out over here, you can't set a table up here, you can't set a rack. But it's a pushback. Everything's a pushback today. I remember I used to watch the city meetings, and I still do. And I've seen the rollback. I remember when Ms. Norwood was questioned, and she allowed public comment to go and take place with no time limit. Because the public voices matter. Freedom matters. And it's all been pushed back and squashed down. I've seen citizens come here who sign up and try to give their time and voices for someone to better articulate or better passionately of the fact that they may not be able to speak because they have pain in their heart. And they've been shut out, shut down. And you new guys have done that, Mr. Hillis. You came from a community with that had a reputation of a person who public comments matter and their voices matter. Freedom do matter. And I was a big drinker. I don't think nobody drunk more than me coming out of high school. And I came into a consciousness and I was able to pull back. But the poor drinks and to have it past 2:30, and I understand, I didn't know it was 2:30. I haven't drunk liquor so long. But the fact is, I stand with the community who say that we don't need to expand it. Why? Because it's better for business. Well, what about the business of death? What about the business of injury? What about the business of a father or uncle who have alcohol problems and they hurt somebody? The fact is that public voices matter, and we should be very careful how we squash them, and we ought to be able to expand them and listen to them. So I would just end it with that let's not try to restrict people. And please, council people, you new and your old ones who've been here, do not allow a new trend to come in and you just bite on it or you just go along with it. The truth of the matter is the new ones should speak up when you see, well, we don't do it like that now. We don't want to do it like that now. You can't do it in this council like that. Well, I just heard that you couldn't pass it on, and that in this council, in this meeting, if that's the case, Mr. Hillis, you ought to pull back to what's really give people engagement and express the freedom of speech that need to be talked about. Thank you so much.
Next is Ken Roebling.
Good afternoon, council members. Thank you for allowing me to speak. Recently on TV, I watched the brand new Fire Station 22. I thought, that's a very good looking fire station. And it's been a long time coming, so I thought, I'd like to go over there and take a look and see what it looks like. You know, $2 million of artwork in that. It's a good looking fire station, $2 million worth of artwork. It's gotta be a great visit. So I Googled it, because I don't know where it is. And Google showed me the old Fire Station 22, built in 1938. I'm wondering, has Google not updated its new fire station? But I looked further, and they said that the new fire station is at 855 Hollywood Road, which is down the block from old Fire Station 22. So I said, well, I know where the new one is, so I'm going to go take a look at it. Well, when I got there, I was surprised to see that it didn't match the picture on TV. As a matter of fact, it looked like a giant erector set with no walls, no signs that it's a fire station. And I'm wondering, a year ago, you people voted $10 million for that. And I don't know how long it takes to build a fire station. But when I was there, I looked around and didn't see anybody working on this fire station. So I'm wondering, will that ever get built? In 2010, the council voted $25 million for that fire station. and was assured that the property was purchased. So I don't know what happened to that $25 million, but the $10 million does look like it's starting to work. But I don't think we should be holding our breath for that fire station anytime soon with nobody working there. I know it's not your responsibility to see that the contracts are followed through on. That's the mayor's problem. But I think there's three at-large council members, and whosoever district this fire station is in, it's either 3, 8, or 9, I'm guessing. I haven't seen the latest district map. But it's gonna be one of those. So somebody ought to take a look at that and see how it's going, because it doesn't seem to be going very fast. And that's about all I get. Oh, I'm over. Wow, sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Next is Rod Powell.
Just to be clear, am I to understand no one can yield time?
Can I hear you speaking into the mic?
Am I to understand that no one can yield time?
Yeah.
Okay.
3 minutes.
Because this involves a murder, may I ask for an exception?
This is the time for you to speak. We don't take questions.
Why not?
Go ahead.
I'm asking for an exception.
What's that?
I'm asking for an exception because this involves a murder.
This is a public comment. This is our time to hear from you, and then we'll take what you say. And if we have any questions or follow-ups, you didn't provide one here, but you can provide your email address and phone number. Go ahead.
You misunderstood me. I'm asking for an exception to the yield because this involves a murder.
Again, we do not take questions.
You don't.
Public comment.
Okay.
Please go ahead and start the time.
This is about homicide being staged as suicide. This is a 911 call.
Can you fucking hear?
Darius Scott, and this chilling 911 call describes his murder. This murder was staged as suicide. APD has ruled this a suicide and has not come off their decision. The four detectives who showed up on screen were Ralph Woolfolk, Christopher Fall, Francesca Barber, and Jermaine Shaw. The Fulton County Medical Examiner has amended her decision to undetermined based upon numerous issues. I am here to advocate for more training and an SOP. There are trends in public safety. Homicide stages, suicide has happened. We need a real investigation. We're talking to the public sector or to the public safety group of the council because this is a public safety issue. There is a murderer walking around the streets of Atlanta, and we're appealing to the council and to, we've reached out to the police in every way. Captain Woolfolk has never spoken to the family, never explained how he reached that decision, and it is mind-boggling. This happened in 2021. This happened in 2021. Up next is going to be his mother.
Marlena, can I ask
state your name?
My name is Catalina Scott, and I'm Darius's mother. The 911 call that you just heard was my son, about my son being shot in the head. For the last 2 years, I have repeatedly reached out to police and to anyone that can help me because it is incredulous that APD refuses to believe that my son did not kill himself. That young man had a full life. He was educated at Atlanta International School. He was bilingual, had an international baccalaureate degree, a college degree in accounting, traveled the world, filled any room with life. This is my son. And I sent you guys packages, but I didn't include the picture. So my point is, he had a lot of life to live for. He enjoyed life. What he did not have was the courage to kill himself. He is being held accountable for his death, but he didn't do it. And I'm here to ask you all to please hold those who are accountable for him dying, hold them accountable, hold the people accountable who cover this up as a suicide. Hold the people accountable who do not look at the facts, such as a 911 call where a woman states very clearly the man shot him in the head. How do you call that suicide? I don't understand. I don't understand.
Step out and speak with you about this matter.
Okay.
Next is Marlena Marnigan. Excuse me, you're Ms. Marnigan?
I am.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, City Council members Amos, Dozier, Shipman, Norwood, Boone, Lewis, Bond, and I understand the young lady stepped out. My name is Marlena Marnigan, but my name is really not important. I'm here as a voice, more so for my sister and my nephew. I was actually there the morning that she called me. It was probably 4 to 5 in the morning, clothes on backwards, arrive on the scene, only to find my nephew who had been shot and killed. And look, I'm usually the one that breaks down, but my sister is the one that's always the strong one. We always say, hold my purse. I held her purse that day. And I saw exactly what happened in terms of the way the cops handled the situation. They immediately were so dismissive to my sister, who just had her son murdered in the street on I-66 that time of the morning. I dare say to you, there has to be a murderer walking around at this time. I actually have a slight background in some legal, not as a lawyer. I questioned the guys that were in the car with my nephew Darius, and I asked them individually. Yes, I had to use my interviewing skills to do it. Each one of them told me a different story. One was driving, one wasn't driving. My nephew went over to Australia to train for basketball. He trained rigorously, spoke to the coach. He said he was never late. Went to AIS and graduated, actually. Plays the piano. This is Darius we're talking about. Such a bright future ahead of him. And what they're saying is that he killed himself. He's 6'7". Of course, the car seat moved up. How can he drive that? I'm here to tell you that the investigation may have been done, but it was very dismissive. What if it were your child? You would want someone to really look into it. And I'm just here to tell you that there is a murderer out there. We actually spoke to the detective, and for him to say on the scene without even investigating, we're declaring it a suicide. Pardon? A suicide? A suicide without even investigating the situation. I'm just here to advocate for my sister, my nephew. God bless you. And have mercy upon yourselves as you reinvestigate the situation. Thank you.
Linda Fitzhugh. Powell.
Good afternoon. My name is Connie Powell. My grandbaby boy, Darius Scott, was murdered. Now, the police told us it was suicide. I was the last person in the family that he talked to. He was very athletic, and I got a cramp in my leg. And he was telling me on the phone what to do. He said, I'll call you back later or come over. Now, I don't know how many here are grandparents. They're probably parents, maybe grandparents. And sometimes things happen to us individually before we feel. But you don't have to wait for this to make you feel. If someone said to you that your loved one that you knew very well committed suicide, then you know that person. You would think about the last things that were said or what he did. My grandbaby boy, he was 6'7". He spoke several languages. He played basketball all over the country. He was very good at AIS. You all know AIS. You gotta work hard to go to that school and graduate. He was a bright, beautiful person. For that, I forget the name of the officer, whoever was head, to say it's suicide. And you're standing there on the scene. You haven't investigated, you haven't looked around, you haven't asked questions. There were four people in that car. They all four got out. And someone said, oh, he shot himself. Darius? You gotta know him to know. Darius was full of life. He had things, everything was going on. So I don't know if I'm over time or not, but think about it. At least investigate. These are the people who head the city, who take care of us, our protector. You gotta look at the matter. You got to know, you got to ask questions. They didn't question people. And why didn't they come to the house to see the family? Don't you care? Care, people. Do something. Talk to somebody. Make it right. At least let them investigate. I appreciate you all listening, and I thank you.
I wish you had your undivided attention.
Duana Thomas.
Good afternoon. I am here on behalf of my son, who was Darius's best friend. They knew each other since they were two, but they were best friends since they were five when they began kindergarten at AIS. At AIS, you're called a lifer if you're there from kindergarten until graduation. On the morning that Darius was killed, it affected a lot of people. He has a huge village. You've heard from his mom. You've heard from his grandmother. You've heard from his uncle. You've heard from his aunt. You've heard from family friends. And I'm just here to be part of that village to let you know that this is not a small matter. It ripples. The children he went to school with are devastated. Darius is 6'7". My son is 6'6". They were a head taller than all the kindergartners when they began school. And so obviously, if you're growing up as a little black boy, you look like a little man to a lot of people. But they were sweethearts. They were kids. They had their whole life ahead of them. They graduated, they celebrated. You heard a lot about how Darius went on to play basketball internationally, that he was bilingual, he played the piano. This is what you ask of your children, to be the best that they can be. This is what you sacrifice for as parents. This is why you pay taxes for other kids to go to public school, because you want everybody educated. And this is why you scrape every penny that you can find to pay for an Atlanta International School education, because you're investing in a life. This was not a throwaway baby. This was not a throwaway child. This was not a throwaway life. I watched my son, Mustafa Ahmad Thomas, who had to be a pallbearer for his best friend, crumble. My son is much taller than me. I'm only 5'3". I watched him crumble at my feet. He lived out of town. He had to hold it together to get here from Boston. And he crumbled because someone killed his best friend, the one that is to be at his wedding, the one that is to be the godfather to his children, the one who is absent at every celebration and every sad moment and everything, because someone took it upon themselves to think that they could take his life. But the tragedy did not end there. The bureaucracy then took over and tried to destroy his family by beginning by destroying his mother with disrespect, disregard, making her jump through hoops just to get his body, to get his belongings. Everything has been a re-traumatization, including the improper investigation or the lack of investigation or the cover-up investigation, whatever it is. This does not allow a family to grieve properly because you're so busy trying to. I appreciate that, and I thank you for listening, and I hope that you hear us.
My name is Sharonda Rain. Good afternoon, council members. Gratitude for allowing us this time to speak about my cousin, Mr. Darius Scott Jr. Today we are here because we need you all's help to get the justice he deserved. On November 6, 2021, I still remember leaving my recording studio and getting on Highway 166. This particular morning, I just had this bad feeling as I got on the highway. I can vividly remember passing an accident on the other side of the highway with traffic at a complete standstill. I passed the scene and I said a prayer. I said, God, be with whomever that is. Only to get home 2 hours later and get the worst call ever that my little cousin, Darius, had passed away. Our family was never given the proper investigation that my cousin deserved. His tragic passing wasn't treated like the crime it was. It took statements from the suspect who went in the car and just left it at that. It's November 2023, and me and my family are still praying and hoping for justice for my little cousin, Darius Scott. However you all could assist us in getting his case reopened, we greatly appreciate it. Ms. Norwood, I vote for you every time I see your name on the ballot, and I'm just asking that with that vote, you can help us out. My little cousin has so much life ahead of him. I had just spoken to him about coming to record at my studio. But the way the investigation was handled, the way they have treated my family, is sad. I watch his mom and other members of our family fight this. She spent so many of her time, resources, hired investigators. We're on calls with radios, and we just really need you guys' help because we want to seek the justice that he deserved. He had a big, bright life, and he could have been anybody's son or nephew, and it just wasn't in his character. Just the way they handled the whole situation didn't sit right. They said suicide, and that was it. And we've been fighting. It's, you know, a whole 2 years later, and just coming here to relive this. So when I have to ride down 166 every day to go back to that studio, every time I get by that exit, I think about my cousin. And I know that justice is going to be served, and I just ask you guys humbly as possible to please assist us with reopening the case. Whatever type of help you guys can give us as a family, we need it because we just want to clear his name and get whomever did this to my little cousin off the street. Gratitude, and thank you all, and have a great day.
Next is Matt Tiki or Techie. TBO. Juan Robinson.
Thank you, Chairperson, for showing compassion for the family, for allowing them to go over on the time. Thank you for that. I came down here today because I seen the legislation Councilman Wakes put forth, and like with most things, it kind of divides the city when you're talking about certain issues. And I know that alcohol is near and dear to so many people because some people deal with it from an abuse standpoint. Certain people have lost a family member to DUIs, so I understand that. I don't want to be insensitive to either of those issues, but when you have a business and you're paying your taxes with the alcohol license fees and everything that it takes to get a liquor license, and when we have faced the most a devastating tragedy that we faced in our time, which is COVID-19, and a lot of businesses didn't survive it. Whether it's black, white, a lot of business had to go under and didn't make it. So for those who did survive COVID-19, I think most of them are asking for, hey, if we're shutting down on Sundays at 12, can we stay open at 2:30? What would that hurt? But what would that, you know, sometimes we can be a beacon and look to other counties like DeKalb County. If you want to stay open, Councilman Bond and Councilman Waste late hours, you pay a late night fee, and that money is supposed to go to public safety. So we should be able to have unique transformative ideas for those of you that have been in Atlanta long enough to be able to say, hey, listen, as opposed to saying no to this, how about we mimic DeKalb in this? If you want to stay open late, you pay a late night fee, and money goes to undercover cops and public safety. You know, we can be transformative our ways as opposed to this shutting the door sometimes saying no. Not just for this case, but, you know, for other cases, because if we're going to be an international city, President, then we should be able to stay open later than we stay open. We can't still be living in the Mayberry days where we're closing at 12 and 1, but we want to boast and brag about Atlanta being an international city on this side, but we live in it, we treat it on something different on this side. We can't have it both ways. We got to be able to come to a happy medium, because there's enough things that go on in our city that divide us. So we should be able to come together on some of these things, Councilman Waste. And thank you guys for my time.
Jim Durrett.
Chairman Ellis, members of the committee, Jim Durrett, I run the Buckhead Coalition in the Buckhead Community Improvement District. And I'm here on behalf of the board of the Community Improvement District and the membership of the Buckhead Coalition to express our profound opposition to Councilwoman Waite's proposed ordinance. I've read the reasons for it, and I've heard what two gentlemen here have said about it. But I just want you to know how profoundly we feel about going forward with this. You've heard a lot, and for those that came and shared and relived their pain and their loss, I appreciate your doing that. You're speaking about the position of MADD. I appreciate that. The impacts to quality of life of those who live in these communities, increasingly mixing uses, and the impacts to our streets and people from drunken drivers. We can't understand why you would try to go forward with this. So in appreciation for what folks are saying they need, this is not right. And I don't know if you're going to table this or file it, hold it. We hope it gets buried and doesn't see the light of day. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Remember, wait your mention so you may comment.
Is it on? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To everyone that has come and spoken, whether you were in support or in opposition to the legislation, I'm grateful for you taking the time and for this conversation. I'll be quick, Mr. Chairman. The legislation was introduced for the purpose of discovery. It was to allow individuals that had been negatively impacted by COVID-19 and the pandemic the opportunity to voice their concerns and to build support for a conversation that's kind of been muddled for about a decade now. Nonetheless, I too have lost a loved one to a drunk driver. Her name was Sharon Waits. I understand intimately the opposition that's been put forward today. What I would like to do, and I'd like to ask this committee to join me, is work with all of the stakeholders who are part of this conversation to figure out a happy medium. At the end of the day, for those of us who have traveled internationally, many cities never close. There's a 24-hour opening, and I'm very clear that we don't have the infrastructure to do that today. So for that reason, Mr. Chairman, after speaking with the bar owners and those who are not necessarily happy with what we've come up with, my recommendation is to file, and we start a new copy, and we have something ready at the first of the year. And so again, thank you to all of you who have come out today, and I look forward to working with you and partnering to perfect this and to come up with something that we can all be happy with. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilmember Waits. Abe Wilson. Sarah Koo. K-H-U, maybe, Sarah? Greg Pridgen?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee. I'm here today on behalf of owners of property at 536 Decatur Street. Currently, this is a specialty food shop. It is run by two seasoned veterans who are entrepreneurs, and they would like to change the scope of what this business is about. They have a license right now for beer and wine. They'd like to also now have a chance to sell spirits and make this into a package store rather than a specialty food shop. We would very much appreciate a positive vote on this matter today. I have the owners in the audience with me today if there are any questions that you'd like to ask them as you're proceeding. But we would appreciate a vote to approve and move this matter forward. We thank Councilmember Bond for introducing it as a personal paper. I have a second one, which is similar, and that one's on North Highland Avenue. It is also proposing to be a specialty food shop that sells beer and wine. We have had numerous interactions with the neighborhood association, Morningside Lenox Park. They voted unanimously to support the legislation. We've been working through some logistical matters with Councilmember Lon. The NPU has not taken a position on it. We would very much like for the committee to move forward on the paper, say no recommendation, to give us a chance to be able to get this completed. The store has been under rehab construction, and we think that it will be a positive addition to that community, as the Neighborhood Association voted unanimously in favor. So we would like for you to adopt that paper today or send it forward with no recommendation.
Trevor Young.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Council. And I'd like to start by telling you guys that I appreciate you listening to us all today. And I sat and I watched all of you listen to some of the pain of the people here today, and you listened intently, and even gave some grace. That's what we need in the city. And I'd like to thank you all for coming and sharing some of your, some of this personal pain that you had today. I came today for an important business matter. I'm in favor of this passing this bill. But as I'm listening, I'm hearing some people here that it's a little bit more personal than business matter. And I'm listening, and I want justice for Darius's family. And I want some aid for some of the people who are still hurting today for some of these drunk drivers. And just some of the takeaways that I have, I'm listening and I hear that there's a need for programs, there's a need for help, there's a need for public safety. And unfortunately, Atlanta over the past 2 years has become a major city. And in becoming a major city, we need some major city rules in place. If we don't put these major city rules in place, then these things are going to continue to happen at an excelling rate. These things there's a need for some aid, for some help. And unfortunately though, the nightlife is one of Atlanta's biggest industries. And if we can use that to gain more revenue and put it to help these families and also help the businesses, that'll be a healthy balance. And again, I came today in favor of this, and I understand Ms. Waits wants to table the matter, but if we can somewhere find a healthy balance so that the business owners can get some progress from it, and the city can get some revenue so that they can do the things that they need to do, and in turn help some of the families that need the help, I think we can all work together. Thank you for your time.
Next is Tari Lee, or Tari Key. Sorry, can I make out the print? Suzanne Mitchell.
Good afternoon, Chair Hillis. Good afternoon, Vice Chair Amos, to the committee, and Council President Shipman. My name is Suzanne Mitchell, and I live in Summerhill in Southeast Atlanta. I appreciate Councilwoman Waits deciding to file her paper. If this arises again, I'm respectfully asking the committee to vote no. When the hours were rolled back after the 2000 Super Bowl, it was a public safety issue, and it was for public safety reasons. That incident left a huge stain on the city. Most of you remember that. We know that alcohol-fueled crime increases after 2 a.m. We've lived this already. We all adjusted to the change, and Atlanta is better for that change. When the hours were 4 a.m., most of the city's entertainment resided in Buckhead. Now you have commercial districts in many neighborhoods across the city, including mine, Summerhill. By extending the hours, you are ensuring that alcohol-fueled activity will bleed into neighborhoods and affect residents. It's just not in question. Two questions. How can you vote no to the Public Safety Training Center and then add 2 additional hours of alcohol consumption and possible crime? Make that make sense. How do you ask for teens to be home at 9 p.m., but their older siblings are out till 4 a.m.? Make that make sense. This legislation only benefits strip clubs, bars, and nightclubs. I'm respectfully asking you to please vote no on any future legislation as it pertains to extending hours, and send a message to our public safety men and women that we stand with them. Because I promise you, they don't want to be dealing with alcohol-fueled incidences because of this type of legislation. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and council members. I am not the person that you asked. I was asking if that I could speak in lieu of that person not being here. I tried to get on the... Okay, sir.
So that does conclude public comment. Thank you for all your comments. And now we move on to our presentations. And first up, we have quarterly report of the Atlanta Citizen Review Board, Executive Director
Samuel Reed.
Good afternoon. I'm not the Executive Director, Lee Reed, but I am Shuna Robertson. I am the Atlanta Citizen Review Board's Deputy Director, and I oversee investigations in the Investigations Unit. I have with me Deputy Director Myola Smith, and we have the pleasure of presenting the agency's FY24 fourth quarter report on behalf of the Executive Director, who is out of town attending a conference. I will present the first half of the report and provide a brief overview of the agency and the first quarter complaint data. And Ms. Smith will present the second half, discussing community outreach and other operational issues. As you all well know, the Atlanta Citizen Review Board, which we will refer to throughout this presentation as the ACRB, was created in 2007 to conduct independent investigations of alleged misconduct against Atlanta police and correction officers. Our dedicated, highly skilled, and trained investigators have over 15 plus years of experience in conducting these types of investigations. Our investigations are conducted in a thorough, fair, and impartial manner. And at the conclusion of an investigation, the investigator writes a very comprehensive report detailing the evidence and its investigative findings. And that report, along with the investigative file, is then forwarded to the board for their review and determination. But what makes the ACRB relevant? What are our powers, and what gives the agency its teeth? Well, first and foremost, as I just stated, we have investigatory powers. We have the authority to conduct independent investigations as opposed to other cities that have civilian oversight that only have the authority to review their police department's investigations, which is considered an audit model. Second of all, we have subpoena power. Now, we didn't always have subpoena power. When we first opened our doors in 2008, we faced the same issues that most civilian oversight agencies around the country are currently dealing with. And that is that the police departments was not cooperating with our process. They were not providing the relevant documents that we needed for our investigations, and officers were not submitting to interviews. So we brought these issues before the council, and we were granted subpoena power in 2010. Now, soon as we got our subpoena power, APD created an SOP, or Standard Operating Procedure, that governs the ACRB, that addressed and resolved the issues that we brought before the council. So we have never had to use our subpoena power to compel the APD to cooperate with our investigations and to provide the relevant information that we needed, as well as officers coming in and submitting to interviews. And we've had this full cooperation from them for the past 13 years. But in the event that that changes, we do have subpoena power. Also, the police and correction departments are mandated to provide a detailed legal or factual response to the board's complaints, decisions, and disciplinary recommendations. So what that means is if the board finds that the officer committed an act of misconduct and it's been sustained, and that information is forwarded over to the police department, and they must provide an answer, a response to that determination. And if they accept the board's recommendation to of sustain, then they must impose discipline. The ordinance also grants us full access to relevant police and correction departments' personnel, documents, and records. We have the power to initiate studies that may be of concern to the community and present those findings to the police and corrections department to address. We have the power to recommend that the chiefs of police and corrections take certain actions, such as changes in training and policies, and as I said earlier, imposing discipline on an officer. We have the power to investigate and review all officer-involved shootings, in-custody deaths, and incidents involving a discharge of a firearm, stun gun, or taser that results in death or serious bodily injury. And we also issue public reports and hold public hearings that informs the public, the council, the mayor, and the police and corrections department of the issues that were uncovered during the investigation. I say all this to say is that the council and the mayor should be proud of the oversight agency you have created here in Atlanta. We get calls from many counties throughout Georgia and from states in the Southeast wanting advisement on creating an oversight agency in their jurisdiction and wanting to mirror what you have here in Atlanta. Our current officers of the board are Tamara Orange, who is acting as the board chair, and she represents the Georgia Coalition for the People's Agenda, and Leah Pulliam is the board secretary, and she represents the Urban League of Greater Atlanta. In order for the ACRB to conduct an investigation into a complaint, there are four requirements that must be met. The complaint must involve Atlanta Police or Correction Officer. It must be filed within 365 days of the date of the encounter and incident. The allegations must fall within one of the categories of allegations we are authorized to investigate, and the complaint must be signed. However, we do accept anonymous complaints. And there are several ways that a person can file that complaint with our office. It may be in person, website, email, or through our complaint portal. And in the event that the person is filing anonymously, that person can also file it via phone. We have 15 categories of allegations that we are authorized to investigate, including but not limited to excessive force, false arrest, and conduct. This portion of the presentation, we will discuss our FY24 first quarter highlights, and I'll start off with the complaint data, and Ms. Smith will provide the community outreach. So for the first quarter of FY24, the agency received 59 complaints. 18 of them were assigned for full investigations, 27 were dismissed, and the majority of those dismissals were because the subject officers were employed by other law enforcement agencies and not Atlanta Police or Corrections. 11 of those complaints, we are still waiting for the signed complaint, and 3 complaints, we did receive the signed complaint for, but we need more information from the complainants in order to determine if the complaint is going to be assigned for investigation or dismissed. And at the end of the quarter, we have 44 active investigations, and we completed 10. And those complaints that were received were pretty much evenly distributed amongst the zones, and Council District 3, 4, and 12 received 57% of the complaints. Our top 3 allegations for the quarter were appropriate action required, which consists of allegations involving false arrest, failure to act, and inadequate investigation and service. Number two was conduct, which consisted of allegations involving rude, discourteous, and aggressive behavior. And the third allegation was violation of department standard operating procedures, which consisted of allegations involving inaccurate report, illegal search, failure to write a report, and failure to follow arrest procedures. During this quarter, the board conducted two public hearings, which are held the second Thursday of each month. The board had a break for the summer and did not meet in August. They adjudicated or made determinations on 19 allegations, and all of them involved the Atlanta Police Department. And 50% of those were sustained, meaning that the investigations determined that there was sufficient evidence that the officers involved committed the alleged acts of misconduct. And at the end of the quarter, all of the sustained allegations were still pending a final response from the APD. That concludes my part of the presentation, and now I would like to introduce Deputy Director Myola Smith.
Good afternoon, Chairman Shipman, or President Shipman, and also Committee Chair Hillis. My name is Myola Smith, and I am the ACRB Deputy Director, responsible for agency operations, including administrative functions and board operations, and community engagement, outreach, and educational services. I will be reporting on the first quarter activities related to these areas, which are my responsibilities. Deputy Director Robertson and I have been around since the Atlanta Citizens Review Board first opened its doors 15 years ago. But did you know that citizen oversight of law enforcement has been around in some form or another for four decades, going back as far as the administrations of Mayor Jackson and Young, working with supportive stakeholders, city employees, and community leaders, like Mr. Larry Dingell. That name may sound familiar since you just named the committee room one after him. And these were some of the people who were involved in the early days, because they believed that oversight, a watchful eye, was a good thing for everyone, citizen and police. Because we know that behavior tends to behave when it's being observed. But the difference in those days, and up until the Franklin administration, there was no dedicated staff to perform duties that would eventually hold a board together, such as making sure meetings occurred and taking minutes of the meeting for the record. But out of the pain of losing Ms. Johnston, that was in November of 2006, came purpose. The city established an independent board with dedicated staff with the ability to conduct their own investigations. You know, the first 5 years that the agency existed was devoted to the investigation and complaint process. In 2012, however, the board became convinced that if the agency was were to continue addressing citizens' concerns about police interaction and maintain continuous growth, it would require the ACRB to do a better job of building awareness of the agency and its mission. That meant growing wider community support by making outreach a priority, promoting public awareness and education, and creating engagement opportunities with branded resources. The process of outreach is relatively simple. You go out amongst the people and tell them who you are and what you do. And this can be done via flyers, the usual things, the one-way communication, website postings, media announcements, etc. Engagement becomes a little bit more challenging because the goal is to get people involved and participating in efforts to influence public decisions and community change. To do that, They must first know you and trust you and believe that the services you're providing can actually do some good. High-profile events over the years, such as the death of Ms. Johnson, of course, and the Eagle Raid, we all remember that, and the events surrounding the death of George Floyd, gave people a reason to engage in public decisions or becoming part of community change. Successful community engagement builds relationships in the community and develops new leaders. With continuous growth, hiring additional staff, and growing community support, I am pleased to report that we are stronger and community engagement and outreach, just like investigations, are also core functions of the ACRB. If you look at the next two slides, slide 11 and 12, what you're looking at are the first quarter FY24 highlights from community engagement. You will see that ACRB continues to demonstrate its commitment to outreach and educating the community on proper interaction between citizens and officers. In the first quarter, ACRB has participated in 50 events ranging from festivals to community board meetings, career fairs, to soapbox derbies, malls, and sporting tournaments, and making presentations to promote the agency's work. The outreach team, consisting of a community affairs coordinator, public information officer, and community affairs assistant, coupled with the assistance of a dedicated street integrity street team workers, implemented an aggressive summer outreach campaign to reach thousands of residents and visitors over the summer. Without the help of the IST team, our very small outreach staff would not have been able to accomplish some of these things that you see on these slides here, 11 and 12. We also use various methods to promote public awareness, including making weekly random calls to form partnerships and to establish drop locations to leave ACRB brochures and leaflets that are printed in English and multiple languages. The website is also designed to change from English to other languages. I am proud to say we decided to provide our materials in different languages prior to the existence of iSpeak and the city's mandate for all departments to comply with service information made available in multiple languages. The team also initiated several campaigns to bring awareness through billboards, radio, motor trains, and television. What we have up now is slide 13, and those are pictures of the ACRB mobile operation program. We have two wrap vehicles that you may have seen touring your communities or neighborhoods in your district. If you haven't seen them, you will. During the quarter, the vehicles have logged 1,666 miles. The next slide, slide 14, the ACRB joins the mayor and his administration in support of the Year of the Youth initiative. If you will notice on this slide, there's a list of events that we participated in, including Camp Best Friends. The outreach team introduced at Camp Best Friends our new ACRB mascot, the Justice Crusader, who made appearances at 21 events citywide over the summer. We are very excited to work with parks and schedule appearances for the mascot to appear throughout the duration of the camp. And the mascot was really well received by the kids at the camp. You know, they were able to get their little masks and also their little membership cards, and they got a lot of enjoyment out of that. We also participated in back-to-school events and midnight basketball hosted by the mayor. We're excited about participating in what we consider to be a very timely event hosted by Straight Talk, an intergenerational conversation on the prevention of youth violence, and that was at the Bank Event Center. I am pleased to announce that we are bringing back the popular art and essay contest, and this time it will be bigger and have better scholarship prizes for all Atlanta schools from elementary to high school to college. Because of the contest's popularity, we will again have a special open entry category to allow participation regardless of the age and location. The campaign is scheduled to launch at the end of this month. The theme for the FY24 ACRB Art, Essay, Poetry, and Rap Contest is My Dream of a Just World, One City, One Goal, One Team, Citizens and Police Working Together. Check the ACRB website for full details of the contest following the launching of the campaign. Now, some of you have asked, how can you help us in our efforts? First of all, you can let us know about the events that you're holding in your district and invite us to participate. Also, support efforts and legislation that will give us an opportunity to grow, have more authority, and expand our services by providing adequate resources. But last but not least, commit to fully understanding our work and be able to articulate what you have learned and convey the same to your constituents. Now, the last slide is slide number 15, and this concerns the board. Currently, the board is comprised of 15 seats with 11 different authorities of making appointments to the ACRB. Presently, we have 9 active members, 2 new members, Atlanta Bar Association and APAB NPU group M through R, who have already started the confirmation process with City Council and will be appearing before this committee probably in the next 2 weeks. We have 3 vacancies, the Mayor's Office, City Council President, and 1 more APB seat, and that represents the APU's G through L. We are also looking for council members to introduce legislation changing the name of the second seat that was set aside for youth participation on our board. And as soon as we get that underway, the board will be at the capacity of 15. I would also like to bring to the committee's attention that the person currently serving as a representative for the City Council on our board, the term will expire in February. We're urging you to please consider a nominee to fill the seat when it expires in a couple of months. Now, that completes our presentation for the ACRB first quarter. If you have any questions for me or Deputy Robertson, we will be happy to try and answer them. If not, we appreciate the opportunity to present to the committee today and thank each and every one of you for your time.
Colleagues, any questions or comments? President Shipley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I just wanted to note that my office has been working on our vacancy, which has specific characteristics. It's not just an open vacancy, but right. Specific characteristics about experiences. And we should have a nominee to put forward to full council at the next meeting. That's what we're shooting for. If not, certainly by the first meeting in December. So at least with the council president's office, within the next few weeks, we should be filling that role.
I'm glad to hear that, and I agree with what you're saying. I believe your nominee has to have law enforcement background.
That's correct. Okay. The council president's nominee must have a law enforcement background.
Right. Thank you.
Any other Any other questions or comments, colleagues? All right, thank you very much. Our second and final presentation will be from the Atlanta Policing Alternatives and Diversion. Executive Director Macias.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to share a bit about our work in this first quarter of 2023, FY24. I'm Moki Macias, Executive Director for PAD. And I just want to acknowledge the just the folks that spoke at public comment today, just the grief and pain that was shared. I know that was a heavy conversation for everybody in the room, so I just wanted to acknowledge that before diving in. So to share with y'all some highlights from this first quarter, I want to first acknowledge that we have been hard at work at our Lakewood site. This is a photo of some of our staff members at Lakewood, which is, as you may be aware, the new direct service site at 1700 Lakewood in South Atlanta that we were able to move into this summer. So the pictures that you'll see today represent that site, and we would love to invite council members down to actually check it out in person. So I'll be following up with more information about that invitation. So as folks may be aware, we have been operating in partnership with the City of Atlanta and Fulton County since 2017 to be able to offer a new approach to community safety and wellness that really focuses on people getting what they need in order to address law violations that would otherwise land them in our local jails. So a few highlights from the first quarter before I dive into the data. As I mentioned, we've opened our new community service center at 1700 Lakewood. We've launched a new partnership with the Atlanta Community Food Bank, which allows us to provide a public food pantry weekly at the 1700 Lakewood site and allows us to provide additional food resources to the participants and community members that we're working with, whether that is folks enrolled in our care navigation services or folks that we are seeing out in the community when we're providing community response through 311. We have also begun accepting call transfers from 911 for the panhandling call code. As y'all may be aware, we are receiving transfers already from 911 to 311 for public indecency and have been doing that over the past year. We're really looking to continue expanding that partnership as we're aware that many people continue to call 911 for quality of life concerns when those concerns can be handled through 311. And through our PAD team coming out for community response. So we're really appreciative for the City 911 and 311 systems to continue working with us to provide that service to Atlanta. We also brought on additional new hires for our leadership team, which is pictured below. And I'm joined today by our new Director of Communications, Tamia Dame. I'd love to introduce her to y'all. This is, again, a picture of our new site at Lakewood. We were a part of the city's United site visit this past week, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me, where we were able to invite people from all over the country to come see our work and hear from our staff how we fit into the continuum of alternate response that Cities United is really looking to lift up. You know, as one of the five sites that was featured in the Cities United convening, we were really proud to be able to represent Atlanta in this innovative work and really to make those connections between what is, you know, what we've kind of talked about as the CVI field, community violence intervention and interruption, and our work doing community response. So recognizing that it's full, it's kind of a full circle continuum if we're able to provide the appropriate specialized response to the concern, whether that is through violence and interruption work, or whether that is through responding to quality of life concerns with non-police responders. So we had the opportunity to also host Marcus Walker, the director of the Office of Violence Reduction, and are looking forward to continue partnering with that office, under his leadership, as we think about how to continue expanding and investing in that continuum of specialized responders in Atlanta. All right, so a little bit of the data here. As y'all are aware, we have in-depth monthly reports that we post on our website, atlantapat.org. If you need any assistance identifying those reports or would like me to send them to you directly, please let me know. For our first quarter, we had 65 people diverted to PAD. A few things I want to offer here. The top diverted charges, very similar to what we see month over month. Criminal trespass tends to be our most prolific charge that are diverted, and as we know, that's often related to people experiencing homelessness, as well as panhandling, shoplifting, disorderly conduct, and public indecency being the top charges. 25 people, which is about 38%, were actually arrested but then diverted by prosecutors post-booking to PAD because they were in fact eligible. So that's part of a partnership with Fulton County Solicitor Keith Gamage's office, which we rolled out in October, which allows us to effectuate releases for folks who are at Fulton County Jail that were arrested and booked but were eligible for PAD diversion, had charges that were appropriate, and really needed a service connection. And so we've been able, in the month of October, I believe, we were able to release 22 people to services instead of keeping them in the Fulton County Jail, which we know is overcrowded and has extremely inhumane conditions. So I wanted to just note that the folks diverted here are both diverted from law enforcement out in the street, as well as our law enforcement partners at the solicitor's office. I also wanted to mention that in this period, only 14 people out of the 504 PAD participants that we have this data on were rearrested by APD. So that's a 2% rearrest rate for the individuals that we are working with. Community referrals to PAD through our partnership with ATL 311 resulted in 478 calls dispatched to PAD. A few pieces I want to lift up here. We saw the highest number of calls coming from districts 2, 6, and 4. And you know, we were able to basically connect with folks out in the community who called us, not only directly with the people who were called out, but then also in follow-up calls to those community members that made the call to 311. So it allows us to not only address the immediate needs that community members are calling about, but then also have follow-up conversations with those community members to say, you know, are you aware of the resources within your community? Are you aware of what to do in a situation where, for example, somebody's overdosing or somebody's requesting specific assistance, and provide those resources and those follow-up calls. In terms of the direct support that we were able to provide to people through our alternate response, we were able to connect over 100 people with housing resources. We reunited 4 people with their family members. We provided transportation assistance to 81 people, and 160 people received some sort of food assistance from us. Similarly, we provided clothing to folks, over 70 people, and then connected over 50 people to mental health resources. Obviously, there's overlap here, right, with the folks that we actually work with. But I want to kind of get at that there are immediate basic needs that we are equipped to be able to address so that we can de-escalate the situation, get people to a better frame of mind and experience, and then help them reconnect with other resources. So a lot of our work is figuring out, when we're in the field, what can we address immediately to resolve the current crisis, and then how can we make sure that somebody is connected to better resources for longer term support. So being able to really be that pathway. For community engagement, our community engagement team did door-to-door, face-to-face engagement with over 600 businesses. So that's having a conversation with business managers and business owners, folks who work there, to be able to make sure that they understand what resources are available through the City of Atlanta partnership. And, you know, oftentimes what we find is that not only are we sharing with people about PAD, iPad and about the ability to have an in-person response, but we're also making sure that people know what 311 is. We do a lot of explaining of, you know, this is a city number, this is a city resource, and you can call it for various various concerns. So that's been, you know, an additional benefit for us, having those conversations with folks. We attended 36 community events. I want to thank all of the council members that have provided information about their events, that have invited us out to their events. We welcome any and all opportunities for our team to go out and engage with your community constituents about what issues they're seeing and provide education about how they can use this resource in the city. We had a 19-minute average response time for this period, so that means somebody calls 311 and our team is there, averaging out at about 19 minutes. So there are folks that we get a little quicker to, and then there are folks that take a little bit more time if we have to battle Atlanta traffic, but that's our average, and we feel pretty good about that. We received, you know, some really lovely compliments to the team just in terms of how we were able to engage with community members. And actually, I would like to share a bit of data from the ATL 311 customer satisfaction survey. We receive this satisfaction survey from ATL 311 on a monthly basis, which allows us to make sure that we're on track providing the high quality services that we intend to, and to see if there's anything that needs tweaking. So you know, this is in your packet. I won't go through it, but I did include the graphs from the 3 months. And we're really happy to see that consistently in these survey results, we see very high customer satisfaction with the response and with the ability to actually have this resource in the city of Atlanta, which is, again, it's a first city in the country to provide an in-person response through 311 through our partnership, and continues to be a model for places all over the country. We also received, you know, the comments that we received, we really appreciate. It's really helpful to be able to share this out with the team so they know that their work is really deeply appreciated by people who call and want an in-person response that is most appropriate for the quality of life situation that they're encountering. I'd like to highlight housing successes in particular. You know, we were part of, we got to attend the groundbreaking and press conference related to the Housing Help Center, and we've been working closely with this new office to ensure that, you know, any resources we're aware of, they're aware of, and that we can collaborate consistently to be able to connect people to resources. You know, it's a big part of our work to ensure that people are navigating to housing, and that not only are we helping people connect to the immediate housing resources, but then we're walking with them through the often complicated long-term process to achieve permanent housing. So in this quarter, we celebrated with 17 people as they moved into permanent supportive housing. We were able to place 5 people into recovery support housing as they worked on their sobriety. And then almost 70 people entered emergency shelter with our support and assistance. I want to lift up Mr. Smitherman, who's pictured here with a kind of a welcome package of household supplies that was given to him by the team to be able to move into his first apartment in many, many years. And I'll just quote his words here. "I'd like to let the world know I really appreciate Pad. If it wasn't for Pad for sticking with me for almost 3 years, I wouldn't be where I am today. Today I have an apartment, today I'm clean and sober, and I'm living. All I can say is good things about Pat. I love you all. I hope that you continue to do what you need to do for the people." So we just appreciate those opportunities to get to work with folks like Mr. Smitherman on their journey as we help people navigate the complicated systems that often keep people on the margins. That is it from me, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for your presentation and all the details that you have provided. I've just got a couple of questions. One is, I know
that... Mr. Vaughn, I believe your mic is on. I don't know if they are responsible for it.
Hello?
Good.
Just a couple of questions. One, you know, the busiest shift in public safety anywhere in America is 3 to 11. Are you all still getting off at 7 o'clock in the evening?
So currently, we are aligned with the City of Atlanta 311 hours. I know you're aware that they're open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. So once the call lines at 311 are no longer available, we're not able to receive calls. We are in a position at this point where we would love to be able to expand those hours, but it is a partnership conversation with 311 as to how those calls get dispatched.
Is that a contractual agreement in the contract with the city that you all stop at 7 o'clock?
So the model is that calls are made to the City of Atlanta 311. And we're dispatched through 311. So the contract is that we are aligned with 311 hours.
So that's in the contract?
Yes.
Okay, so that's something to be revised because, you know, a lot of these incidences happen after that time has expired, right? So people can't call 311, people have crisis at night, you know, later in the night, they could benefit from the service. So that's something I hope that this chair and that many will review because, as I've stated, so many incidents happen after that time that police could call or access pad services for that population, I think would also be beneficial. And then, when does the contract come up again for renewal?
We're in the third year of a three-year renewal option, so that'll end June 30th, 2024.
So it would have to be rebid?
I don't believe.
Or this is sole source, right? Sole source contract, okay.
So the contract that we have had with the city over the last 3 years has been based on our model, which we developed to be able to provide both community response and mobile response to law enforcement. That's outside of my purview as to how the city would choose to contract that, but we would need a contract in place to continue providing community response through 311.
Let me ask the law department, is this the sole source contract, right? In the partnership with Fulton County?
Contract was executed waiving the procurement code. So it's not a sole source, but the source was selected, I think, having waived the procurement code.
So yeah, it was legislatively accomplished as opposed to a sole source procedure in the code, right? Would we waive it?
Yes, I will pull the legislation, but I believe that would be the case.
And when you do, can you look for the answer that I asked about whether or not it is, I know that the way the program is set up, that 311 is supposed to refer calls to PAD, but after 7 o'clock, PAD shuts down, so they apparently, because 311 shuts down. And if we want to expand the service, then obviously that will work later than 7 o'clock. So could you look and check to see if that's a contractual obligation or just an operational result of 311 shutting down?
Yes, we'd be happy to do that research and provide that response.
Okay, thank you. And then next. Do you all provide any services at the airport at all? Or have you gotten any calls for service at the airport?
We do not currently provide outreach at the airport because we have an understanding that there are other organizations that have that partnership. So Hope Atlanta is the organization that provides outreach at the airport and is in partnership with APD.
Well, I wish you all would. And I want to say this back also to Ms. Robinson, the law department. It is the presumption that this contract will be renewed. And if it does, I would hope that you all would be involved in what's going on at the airport. Because
because what's going on at the airport is horrible. It is deplorable. If you were to take everything you do during the week, every person you interact with, every referral you get, and put them in the space of our atrium, that is what goes on in the airport every single day. It is an absolute abyss of persons that obviously are in need of services that obviously aren't getting it. And I would hope that in the next, I guess that's 7 months or whatever, 8 months, that during that period we would consider that, Mr. Chair, because from what I'm hearing for people who catch flights, who operate businesses, who are picking up family and relatives, that better than any other point in the city of Atlanta, that the atrium at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport is ground zero in need of these type of services.
We're absolutely happy to have that conversation. I will just note that having a different or another responder is not actually going to solve the problem of people not having the shelter and housing resources that drives them to wait in the airport and sleep there. So I just want to note that.
It's not critical
that we have those housing resources to be able to
offer them. People sleeping there isn't the problem, right? I mean, it's not that people are crashing or urban camping in the atrium. It's everything else. It's persons that need referrals for mental health. It's people that need those other types of services that you described in your report. And if there is another service provider, they must be invisible, because it doesn't appear that there's any services being referred to any of these individuals who are there. And so where you have been very thorough in documenting what you're doing, from what I'm hearing from people who are in, like I said, operating businesses, they're trying to catch flights or what have you, they're ringing an emergency alarm, and it appears that it's not addressed. I mean, there are individuals out there that who would be candidates for your service that broke into the bank out there and desecrated the bank. So it raises other public safety issues. It's like, how do you break into a bank, defecate, urinate, spend the night, and nobody knows that you've done it until people come back the next morning? And so people, you know, there are a lot of tragic stories associated with those who are candidates for your service that are going on out there. Not just that people are sleeping. The sleeping is not the problem. It's everything else. And so it's ground zero for this type of service. And so I just want to be on the record and say that as we contemplate the assumed renewal, that there is an expansion of what you might do for the city.
Yeah, we're certainly open to it.
Okay, I'll withdraw.
Councilmember Boone and Councilmember Bakhtiar.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. I would like to put three locations on your radar, please. 3604 Bakers Ferry Road, near the Kentucky Fried Chicken. It seems to be 8 to 10 individuals there every day needing some assistance. The second location is the Chevron at the corner of Peyton Road, P-E-Y-T-O-N, Peyton Road, and M.L. King Jr. Drive. Those individuals appear to need some assistance as well. And the Bull Grocery Store on the side of a Lyndhurst Drive and M.L. King Jr. Drive. If you all would give these individuals some assistance so that the residents and business owners can get some relief. And they will be happy to assist you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Councilmember Boone. And I have those noted for us to reach out to, and if there are opportunities to have further conversation, particularly with those business owners in the area, we can certainly add that to the list to do proactive outreach and make sure that they understand the process for calling 311, what we're able to offer, et cetera. But I would just say, you know, to the extent that you may have people reaching out directly to you, feel free to send them along to us as well. And if you are having any community events or, anything that you're having within your district where we can be more visible, have those direct person-to-person conversations, bring materials, that sort of thing, we'd really welcome it.
Thank you. So just a quick clarifying point, and I'm not on the committee, but was excited when I saw Pat doing their report. One thing I wanted to address really quickly, because both of you spoke to this, Councilmember Bond was speaking on the airport, but as someone who also has worked in direct services and is very familiar with the services at the airport, I want to just combat some confusion around that and back up what you said. The airport, just so everyone knows, there is a contract in place with Hope Atlanta to be leading the initiatives on the airport. They have, if we have issues with what's happening in the airport, I would urge all of us to reach out to the ED of Hope and find out what is going on. But also, I just want to point out that we have, I want to say, a few thousand people currently in the queue for housing, and we have nowhere to house them because we don't have any permanent supportive housing built. We have a couple hundred units coming online next year, but we can send Pat out all day long, and they do an excellent job, as well as all of our other outreach teams, but if we have nowhere to house people, then we're really just like taking humanitarian pauses before people are left out on the street again. So I just wanted to thank you for that point. I know that adding you all to a contract on the airport when there's already resources in place for that initiative will take you away from other initiatives that we have around the city. So I just wanted to state that that is something I'm fully aware of, and just thank you. And in addition, I would say that I know that you all need help. I think something that we can all help with also is finding out why we're having such issues with Grady doing 10-13
for voluntary assessment, yes.
Well, just because we have individuals that I know in East Atlanta right now and other parts of my district, we have people who have been on the street for a while who might be unmedicated, schizophrenic or bipolar, and those situations, and that is beyond the ability of many of us to be able to help, and so they need psychiatric assistance and to be able to do assessments so they're not a victim of catch and release in the judicial system. So I also just want to name that we shouldn't put that responsibility on you either. And of course, I also wanted to say that given that you all operate within the powers of 311, and that I know every single one of our 311 callers is trained to be able to do referrals, and I just want to state, if we had a 24/7 311, that would in fact allow for PAD to operate longer hours.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And from my knowledge, that is something you have advocated for, correct?
So, you know, I don't want to get in trouble with 311. But
I'm saying they have. I know that Commissioner Good has also advocated.
I don't really fully have a full picture of. All of the operational considerations of what an expansion to 24/7 for the dispatch center would look like. But I will say, you know, to the extent that we have the expansion of that public line, where the team will be able to vet those calls and dispatch them appropriately, we would absolutely be prepared to provide, you know, what it would take for us to get to 24/7 services. And I'll also know, you know, to the extent that that we really want to make an impact on the 911 call center, which is still under a lot of strain, as well as the resources of the police department, being able to transfer 911 calls out of 911 and into 311, where they can be handled.
For lower.
That's
rate,
right.
Yes.
You know, so these non-emergency calls that are hitting the 911 system, if we can just deflect those calls, right out of 911 into 311, which we've proven we can do with the two call codes we're currently taking, if we're able to do that, you know, that's really what's going to relieve the burden of the system, and it would be very powerful to be able to offer that as a 24/7 option to deflect those calls.
Because, of course, that would allow for APD to focus on more violent crimes rather than low-hanging fruit like public indecency, which we know is related to people experiencing mental health issues.
Oftentimes.
Yes, oftentimes. No, I just wanted to state that and give you the opportunity because it's actually thanks to you and Commissioner Good that I am now advocating for there to be a 24/7 customer service program so that we can, one, have 24/7 customer service because constituent lives don't end at 7 p.m. and also so that we can have your services in, around the clock. So I thought it would be fair to also state that you have been, as has Commissioner Good and her team, been an advocate for a 24/7 system so that you can actually operate more frequently.
Yeah, we do see that as the next step, you know, and if we think about 2 years from now, if I could just very briefly, Chair, it, you know, if we think about, let's say this, 2 years ago, we didn't know that we would be getting ready to celebrate the opening of a 24/7 diversion center, including a sobering center, the likes of which we haven't had in the city of Atlanta since the 80s, right? We didn't know a couple of years ago that we'd actually get to that point. And, you know, next year we'll have that resource. And so what we see is that the next step to continue building out an innovative approach to public safety in the city of Atlanta is to continue providing the appropriate responders at the appropriate time for community concerns, many of which do not need to be handled by the police department. So when we think about what it could look like 2 or 3 years from now, certainly having that availability 24/7 for community members to request that kind of assistance is something that, you know, we are talking with peers all over the country to make, you know, they're making that a reality in their communities, and we'd love to make that a reality here.
Thank you. And so I appreciate you as always, deeply grateful to Pat and the work that y'all do. And I know that we as a city need to do a better job of contacting help to find out what on earth is happening at the airport, to build more permanent supportive housing so we actually can send people to locations, to reduce our barrier, to have low barrier to no barrier shelters, a housing first approach, to work with Grady to make sure they're fulfilling their duties, because we cannot solely place that on you. So aware of all the things we're needing to improve as well. And I'll keep advocating. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And you know, we're very glad to be in partnership with all of our outreach team partners, including Hope Atlanta and Grady and this work. It really takes a village, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for the quarterly presentation. That concludes our presentations. We will now move on to the consent agenda. I'll make a motion to accept all favorable claims, items 1 through 5. Is there a second?
Second.
Vice Chair Amos. Read the vote.
Closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. Those items are adverse. We have one ordinance for first read. Ms. Linda.
Hold on, Mr. Chair. That's 230-1632. This is an ordinance by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee to amend Chapter 78, Fire Prevention and Protection, Article 3, Section 78-57 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Atlanta, to adopt by reference the most recent edition of the International Fire Code, including all appendices thereto, as currently adopted by the State of Georgia and amended by Chapter 120-3-3 of Georgia Safety Fire Commissioner Rules, Regulations, save and accept such portions as are altered, amended, or repealed herein and for other purposes.
Thank you. Moving on to our regular agenda ordinances for second read, 230-1600.
Mr. Chair, we do have a substitute.
Councilmember Waits has indicated she, you know, believes she wants to file this paper, so there's no sense in substituting or filing. Councilmember Waits, what are your wishes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to be clear again on the record that the purpose of the introduction of the legislation was for discovery. It was to allow both sides to come in and weigh in terms of support as well as opposition. And based upon the feedback that we've received today, we believe it's in the best interest that we file the paper and work with all stakeholders that are impacted.
Would you like to make that motion?
I would, sir. I'd like to make a motion to
Mr. Chairman, that. May I read the paper into the record?
Yeah, if you want to read it into the record.
Yes, this is 23-0-1600. This is an ordinance by Councilmember Keisha Sean Waite to amend the Code of Ordinances of the City of Atlanta, Georgia, Chapter 10, Article 2, Division 5, Section 10-29C and D, entitled Hours of Operation, in order to extend the hours that establishments licensed to sell distilled spirits, wine, and or malt beverages for consumption on the premises may sell distilled spirits, wine, and or malt beverages to waive conflicting ordinances and for other purposes.
There's a motion to file by Councilmember Waits, which I have seconded. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. Motion passes to file. 23-0-1601. There is a substitute for this. I'll make a motion to bring forth the substitute. Second. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Norwood.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas and 0 nays. The substitute is before us.
This is an ordinance by Council Members Keisha Sean Waite, Byron Amos, Antonio Lewis, Jason Dozer, Marcy Collier Overstreet, Matt Westmoreland, Dustin Hillis, and Amir Farouki, as substituted by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee, authorizing a donation of $10,000.00 to the Atlanta Police Foundation for the purpose of supplementing the reward for information which results in the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for the September 19, 2022 hit and run of 33-year-old Brittany Glover and for other purposes.
Adopt on substitute. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Vice Chair Amos. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. That item is favorable on substitute. 23-0-1603, item number 4.
This is an ordinance by Council Member Amir Farouki to amend Chapter 74, Environment, Article 9, Litter Control of the City of Atlanta Code of Ordinances to provide for a minimum fine of $500 for a person or entity guilty of the offense of unlawful disposal of litter, where any piece of or components of the litter so disposed shall be located on an area of 100 square feet or more of private property or property open to the public within the City of Atlanta and for other purposes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Norwood. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. That item is favorable. Item number 5, 23-0-1605.
This is an ordinance by Councilmember Michael Giovann to amend Chapter 10, Section 10-93 of the City of Atlanta Code of Ordinances so as to add a new subsection C to provide an exemption from distance requirements for packet store licensed to sell malt beverages, wine, and or distilled spirits by the packets listed in Section 10-88.1B of the City of Atlanta Code of Ordinances for one packet store located at 536 Decatur Street Southeast, Atlanta, Georgia, 30312, and for other purposes.
Entertain a motion.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Bond, second by Councilmember Waits. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
4 yeas, 0 nays, 2 abstentions. It's favorable. Item number 623R4445.
This is a resolution by Council Members Keisha Sean Waits, Alex Bond, Dustin Hillis, Amir Farouki, Mary Norwood, Howard Shook, Michael Julian Bond, Jason H. Winston, and Byron B. Amos to be entitled Erica's Law to urge the Georgia General Assembly to enhance super speeding laws in the City of Atlanta and for other purposes.
Motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Waits.
Yes.
Up to speak. Councilmember Waits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Erica Pines, her life was significantly impacted in July of 2023 by a super speeder on a highway, which pushed her vehicle into the median, shattering her leg. And since that time, she's been immobile since July. So this, right now, I think in the state of Georgia, we have penalties, but obviously they don't go far enough. And so this is simply something to supplement what we already have on the books to strengthen those laws. We are all aware of the challenges that we've had with individuals who have taken over the intersections of the city, who have sped down highways, and certainly the loss of life has been significant. And so we're hoping that this legislation will go a long way in saving lives and to urge the General Assembly to adopt and pass stricter penalties such as these.
Councilmember White, Councilmember Boone.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to add my name to this legislation. We all know Erica Pines, a native of Atlanta, a graduate of Frederick Douglass High School, a very, very bright, courageous community leader in her community. We know her family, so we are definitely supporting this, and we'll be going over to the Capitol in January asking them to please look at this legislation and make the penalties for these crimes much harsher. Thank you.
Would you like to make a motion to amend that, your name?
I would like to make a motion to add the name of Andrea L. Boone to this legislation.
Second. Second by Councilmember Bond. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. The item is amended. We have a motion. Councilmember Waite, seconded by myself, to adopt.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. That item is favorable on as amended.
Mr. Chair, this is a dual referred item and we'll now go to FEC.
Okay. Item number 723R4474.
This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee to rescind resolution number 22R4627 and authorize payment in the amount of $7,805.69 in settlement of the property damage claim Mid-Century, also known as Enrique Rogers, against the City of Atlanta and for other purposes.
I'll make a motion to adopt. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Bond. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. The item is favorable. Item number 823R4528.
This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the mayor or its designee to exercise the third renewal option for FC10631 emergency fire dispatch installation software support and maintenance with Medical Priority Consultants, Inc., doing business as Priority Dispatch Corp. on behalf of the Atlanta Police Department for a term of 1 year, effective from December 13, 2023 through December 12, 2024, in an amount not to exceed $64,050. All contracted work to be charged to and paid from the fund, department, organization, and accounts listed herein, and for other purposes.
Motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Norwood. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 yeas, 0 nays. That item is favorable. Item number 923R4529.
This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the mayor or designee to enter into amendment number 1 for extension of contract CPG list number listed herein, vehicle rental with Enterprise Leasing Company of Georgia, utilizing the state of Georgia statewide contract listed herein, pursuant to 2-1602. Article 10 of the Procurement and Real Estate Code, City of Atlanta Code of Ordinances, on the behalf of the Atlanta Police Department, in amount not to exceed $150,000 per year. All costs shall be charged to and paid from accounts listed herein and for other purposes.
I believe we have a request from law to hold this.
Got a motion to hold. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Boone. Please prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote's closed.
6 ayes, 0 nays. That item is held. Items 10 through 14 are settlements, and we'll take those as a block, Ms. Linda.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Item number 10 is 23R4530. It's a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the settlement of all claims against defendant City of Atlanta in the case of Brandy Mitchell Mann versus City of Atlanta, civil action listed herein, pending in the state court of Fulton County, Georgia, in the amount of $60,000, authorizing the settlement amount to be charged to and paid from account number listed herein, and authorizing the chief financial officer to distribute the settlement amount and for other purposes. Item 11 is 23R4531. This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the settlement of all claims against defendant City of Atlanta in the case of Kyle Moore versus City of Atlanta, civil action listed herein, pending in the state court of Fulton County, Georgia, in the amount of $130,000, authorizing the settlement amount to be charged to and paid from accounts listed herein, authorizing the chief financial officer to distribute the settlement amount and for other purposes. Item 12 is 23R4532. This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the settlement of all claims against defendant City of Atlanta in the case of AWP Inc. versus City of Atlanta, civil action number listed herein, pending in the Portage County Municipal Court, Ravenna Branch of Ravenna, Ohio, in the amount of $6,500, authorizing the settlement amount to be charged to and paid from the accounts listed herein, authorizing the chief financial officer to distribute the settlement amount and for other purposes. Item 13 is 23R4333. This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the settlement of all claims against defendant City of Atlanta in the case of Marlo Fan versus City of Atlanta, civil action listed herein, pending in the state court of Fulton County, Georgia, in the amount of $400,000, authorizing the settlement amount to be paid from accounts listed herein, and authorizing the chief financial officer to distribute the settlement amount and for other purposes. Item number 14 is 23R4534. This is a resolution by Public Safety and Legal Administration Committee authorizing the settlement of all claims against defendant City of Atlanta in the case of Ian Dotson versus City of Atlanta, civil action listed herein, pending in the state court of Fulton County, Georgia, in the amount of $90,000, authorizing the settlement amount to be paid to and charged from accounts listed herein, authorizing the chief financial officer to distribute the settlement amount and for other purposes.
Make a motion to approve items 10 through 14. Is there a second? Second by Vice Chair Amos. Prepare the vote.
The vote is open. The vote is closed.
6 ayes, 0 nays. Those items are favorable. That, I believe, brings us to the end of our legislative agenda. There's no items coming off hold that I've been informed of. So any questions, comments from committee members? All right, if not, we will stand adjourned by unanimous consent of members present.